Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
All right, well, welcome. Here we are on the first Sunday night in April 2020, and we are live from the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. And I'm looking out across the medical center, and it just looks beautiful. The sun's going down. Been kind of a cloudy day today, kind of rainy off and on, but I want to tell you what, I'm so excited about what the next 6 weeks has in store for you, the listeners, and the program. It's just going to be awesome. You might as well go find some duct tape and duct tape your socks on, because it's going to fix to just blow your socks off with the guests that we have on the radio show the next few weeks. So we're just going to share with you the excitement of that. I'm going to introduce to you tonight some special co-hosts. Never had a co-host before, but they are going to be special co-hosts for the duration of this 6 weeks, and they are Joe and Darty Hendershot, and they are from Ohio. And I think you heard Joe and Darty on a program several weeks ago. They were in their hotel room in Atlanta, and they had just got off the stage from talking to a huge crowd and giving them all their wisdom and interacting with them, and they rushed to the hotel room and called in, and they have an awesome work. They are founders of Hope for the Wounded, and Joe and Darty just recently wrote a book called Supporting the Wounded Educator, and hope that's doing well for them. And they have a new book that they're working on, and thus the reason why we're all going to be on this call together the next few weeks, and the people that's in this book and how this book idea came about, and that's called Warriors of Hope. Joe and Darty, I just want to welcome you from that awesome state of Ohio to our listening audience tonight. Welcome, Joe and Darty. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Sure can, Dr.
Joe, are you there? There you go.
Yes.
Hey, Joe's there.
I'm here.
We had to put Joe. He's been bad. We put him in the backyard. So,
yeah.
Well, good to have you all. And I tell you what, the more I talk to you, the both of you, and the more we share on Skype and just text and emails and phone calls, and the more I fall in love with you guys. And I just appreciate your hearts and your spirits and the mission. And I think we're just kindred spirits on this, of how we feel about what we've been given to give to the world. And I just appreciate you guys' work. And I I'm just going to kind of turn it over to you for the next couple minutes, Joe and Darty. Tell me about this book that you have going up, going on, that you're starting to write. What's involved in that, and how am I going to be involved, and the other guests on the program? I'm just going to throw it over to you, and Joe or Darty, either one, take it away, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well,
you bet.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Williams. We've just completed our third book. Darty and I co-authored Supporting the Wounded Educator. And in the back of my mind, as I've traveled around the country over the past, well, since 2006, I've ran into people that I found are warriors of hope. We're hope for the wounded, and I just find more and more warriors of hope. And I just thought, you know, I'd like to make a collection of stories of people like yourself, Dr. Williams, our guest tonight, Christian Moore, I couldn't think of two more people that I would want to be in the book than you two. And some of our special guests that we're going to have over the next 5 to 6 weeks will be have a chapter in the book as well. And we're just going to talk about people that are doing things to help our kids in times of crisis, working with kids beyond at risk that we call wounded kids. And so that's what this is about, is just giving a platform for those warriors of hope.
And this will be in a book, correct, Joe?
Yes, yes. We're looking to compile this, and hopefully we're just starting it. We just completed our last book came out last month, so we're just now getting started on this. And I'm going to be authoring this one, I believe, on my own, and then Darty's going to be authoring another book on her own. So.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds like a great idea. Can't wait to read this one. That's going to be wonderful. So, Darty, what's on your mind?
Well, along those lines, I think one of the things I want to say about this Warriors of Hope is that, you know, right now with everything that's going on, this is a tough time for everybody. Yeah. And I think you hear people throwing around, you know, the word hope a lot. And I just want people to hear our heart about this right now, that when we say that we want people to have hope, that's not a glossing over of what's been hard or what is hard right now. Mm-hmm. It is a realization that sharing our authentic stories, our real stories of knowing what the bottom of the ditch looks like and then how we climbed out of there is what brings people hope. And what I love about the lineup over these next few weeks, including you, Dr. Williams, is each of these people is not speaking theoretically about hope. They're speaking from personal experience with adversity and how they've made their way out of that, tools that they've used, inspiration, sharing how other people came alongside them. And I think that's what I'm most excited about with Christian tonight, is that he has an amazing story that he is very willing to share with people as a real help and hope right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, thank you. And we would like to just go ahead and join in on the conversation, Christian Moore from Utah. And Christian, welcome to the program. And I just want to let you know that I read your book. It's awesome. I read it this weekend, and I encourage everybody, and this is something that I really want everybody to hear before we jump into your stuff, Christian, that everybody that's the guest on these programs the next few weeks, go to their Facebook page, go to their Amazon page on their on Amazon, like it. If you've read the book, review it, share it. Post it, whatever, because those numbers mean a lot of people, and the more numbers they get, the better tread that is the traction that they get, and it just helps everybody out. And we're going to have an awesome platform, and I just highly recommend everybody to go right now and order this book right online. And that book is called The Resilience Breakthrough, and it's a fantastic book, Christian. Thank you, and just welcome to the show.
It is great to be here. I'm a big fan of the work you're doing, Dr. Williams. As a clinical social worker, what you've done to break the silence is so, so important. And, you know, after being in therapy for years, working with people as a therapist, and just seeing the pain that abuse creates, you speaking out is everything. We've got to get this on top of the table, and you played a huge role in doing that. I also really appreciate Dr. Hendershot and Darty. I kind of refer to him as Joe because I've known him for a while, but I want to pay my respect because he's one of the greatest warriors of hope I've ever come across. And so to be here on your show and to be with Joe and Darty is a true, true honor. I've stood next to Darty at a conference one time when watching people line up and talk to her and really reach out to her. She really is someone who represents hope. And when you talk to her for 5 minutes, you know you're with someone special who truly is unconditional and truly cares. So it's an honor to Pat Darty here as well. I want to reinforce what she just mentioned, what Darty mentioned about COVID-19. I just want to start out and say my heart is with all my brothers and sisters around the world right now, you know, dealing with this huge crisis. You know, we're all feeling a lot of emotions, you know, we're feeling anxiety, fear. Those are normal feelings to feel right now. And, you know, this, you know, a lot of times when I talk about trauma or helping the wounded child, you know, I'm talking about a specific group of people. But right now, what's going on in this world, you know, we're all dealing with some trauma right now. And I've been on this earth for 50 years. I've never seen this level of universal trauma in my lifetime. So I want to pay respect to what people are really dealing with right now.
Yeah.
Now, I want to start out and share with you a little bit of my background and what got me interested in being a social worker and doing this work. My background is I grew up in between D.C. and Baltimore in a family of 12 kids, 5 brothers, 6 sisters. Both my parents had some mental health challenges. My mom had social phobia, generalized anxiety disorder, had a fear of leaving the house. So there wasn't a lot of food to eat in my house. You have to leave the house to get food. So there's usually pickles, olives, and tuna fish when I was growing up, but that's another workshop. And then my dad was a GS-16 code breaker at NSA. You could say to my dad 5,898 times 10,852, and he could instantly rile that off the top of his head. So he was recruited because he's one of the top mathematical geniuses in the world. He became a code breaker at the National Security Agency, but was autistic. So I have an autistic father, a mom with social phobia, generalized anxiety disorder. As a child, I was diagnosed with ADHD, conduct disorder, severe learning disabilities. I was illiterate when I was 17 years old. And because of my parents' mental health issues, I was a street kid. I could hang out till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning on a school night. Well, long, long story short, I was very lucky. One of my best friend's moms, I endearingly called her Mama Jackson. She knew I was out there on those streets late at night, and she didn't really want me hanging around her son because she knew I'd be a bad influence on him. But basically, her son Sean, who was my best friend, let her know kind of what my home life was like, what I was dealing with. And she reached out to me and just said, look, Christian, you can come eat food in our house whenever you want it. I'm going to go to your, you know, parent-teacher conference. I'm going to follow up. You can't just keep running these streets all night. And it was kind of an informal foster care situation. She took over and helped raise me. So I'm a white kid who was kind of an informal foster care situation raised by an African-American mother. And again, I endearingly called her Mama Jackson because she played definitely a parental role in my life. Well, long, long story short, she gave me the tools to graduate from college with a 6th grade math level, 7th grade reading and writing level. So one of my claims to fame is, you know, Dr. Williams, I'm one of the dumbest people to ever graduate from college. And so not too many people say they did it. In the U.S., about 2% of my peers in special ed get a bachelor's degree, and 0.5%, not even 1%, get a master's degree. So statistically, I had a better chance of playing the NBA and becoming LeBron James and telling you this crazy story, Dr. Williams. And so it's interesting. One of Martin Luther King's good friends, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Virgil Wood, who helped plan the March on Washington with Dr. King, he read the book, The Resilience Breakthrough, learned what we were doing. And in the last 20 years, we've brought social and emotional skills, mental health skills, to over 3 million kids across this country in over 30,000 schools. And he said, look, you never would have done this without Mama Jackson. And so about a year and a half ago, they gave her the National Rosa Parks Award. And that's kind of my crazy journey. So Mama Jackson, her name is Patricia Jackson, got the National Rosa Parks Award. And when I graduated from college, when I saw her sitting there, I was one of the first people in my family to go to college, graduate from college. When I saw her sitting in the audience, I thought to myself, before I'm 6 feet under, I'm going to make sure every child in this country has access to the social and emotional education and the resilience Mama Jackson gave me. I remember Mama Jackson sitting out in front of my house. She put some warm food on a plate because she knew if I didn't come to her house the night before, I didn't have any dinner. I definitely didn't have any breakfast that morning. So she'd sit out in front of my elementary school and she'd say, look, Christian, I can't get rid of your parents' divorce. I can't get rid of your learning disabilities, the challenges in this neighborhood. You have every reason to be angry, but you have to use that anger as a reason to turn in your homework, to stay in school. She started showing me how to maximize the pain, the negative emotions that I was having in my life. And I'll come back to that in a few minutes, but I just want to plant the seed of what probably enabled me to be on this show right now. I wouldn't be on here without Mama Jackson, my incredible wife, Wendy, who helped get me through school. There were amazing people that showed up in my life. So that's my background a little bit.
Wow. I tell you what, I'm getting ready to make a side call into Guinness Book of World Records because I don't think we've got that many words in that amount of space in the history of the world. That was unbelievable, Christian. Are you like this all day long?
Hey, I'm a verbal assassin. The I have severe ADHD. Most people, after they hear me for about 3 minutes, they go, "Wow, that guy's not joking. He has severe learning disability, ADHD." Now, what I try to do with it is create a productive outcome with it. When I diagnose children with ADHD, I bring in this article in Newsweek that showed that like 70% of CEOs in America, you know, have ADHD. It can be your best friend or your worst enemy, but we have to know how to create a productive outcome with it.
All I got to say is I'm praying for your wife. That's all.
Yes. A lot of people be in a car. You should be in a car with him, Dr. Williams.
Oh, I bet. That's a hoot. I bet. Hey, Joe and Darty. Joe and Darty, how did you meet Christian? How did you hook up with him and just fall in love with him? And what is there any kind of background there before we get into the meat of the book?
Well, for me, I just got to meet Christian for the first time last summer at our conference here in Columbus, Ohio. It's called Connecting the Dots for Social Emotional Learning conference that Hope for the Wounded puts on. And so Christian came, and I remember I was standing there, and this guy's walking towards me with a big smile on his face, and he said, "You're Darty." And I went, "Oh, my gosh, it's you," because I feel like I've known him forever, but I just met him face-to-face for the first time last summer. So that was awesome for us, for our kids. They got to meet him finally. But, Joe, I'll let you explain how much longer you've known him in person.
Yeah, Joe.
Christian and I were talking a little bit earlier today, and we've been on this journey for a long time, and we really just connected about 6 years ago at conferences, just kind of bouncing, you know, setting up. I was doing a session, he'd be doing a session, he'd be doing a keynote, I'd be doing a keynote, and we just started talking, we just started looking at our messages, and a lot of people actually started saying to us, "You and Christian ought to connect because your message is just mess." And so we actually this year just did a Hope for the Wounded, Reaching the Wounded Student Resiliency Conference, just Christian and I. So we became fast friends, colleagues, partners, just really meshing the idea of wounded, working with wounded kids, woundedness, and how resiliency plays into all that. And as you all heard, how could you not love Christian? I mean,
he could just
light up a room, and he just can carry the conversation quite well and get across the message. Some people are born teachers, and he's one of them.
Well, I tell you, Christian, I would fly anywhere in this country to hear you and Joe on the same stage back to back. And just interacting with each other and just the information that y'all have is phenomenal. I think right now we're going to go ahead and take our first break. And then Christian, on the other side of this break, I'm going to jump right inside of the book and I'm going to let you take off. But there's so many questions that I have, and I know we're not going to be able to get to them all. But I want everybody, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, to get on Amazon right now and look up Christian Moore and the Resilience Breakthrough, and why don't you just go ahead and put it in your cart and order it? It's not that expensive, and it is well worth every dollar that you spend on this book. Every page has some great wisdom. So on the other side of this break, Christian, I'm going to see if I can just dig inside of that brain and try to figure out some of the things that you see.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right. Thank you, Douglas. Welcome back. And I am just like a little kid in a candy store. So excited to have the people that we have with us tonight, and Joe and Darty in Ohio, and Christian Moore. They're in the Rocky Mountains with his wife and two kids. And I just have to ask before we get really deep, Christian, did you get the name of your dog from the Johnny Quest cartoons? Bandit. That's the dog in Johnny Quest. Is that where you got that name?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Awesome. I loved that cartoon as a kid.
Me too, man. Bandit. I can't name a dog anything but Bandit. That's awesome. That's funny.
That's right.
You're the first person to point that out. That's cool.
I saw that and thought, wow, Johnny Quest, that brings back some great, great memories. You know, as I was reading your book yesterday and today, it was great to have something of quality to read nowadays. You know, I go to Barnes & Noble all the time and buy a load of books all the time. But most of the time I'll read a chapter or two and then it goes into the closet. But this one I've read from the beginning to the end, and it's really good. I can't say it enough, Christian. There's a lot of wisdom in those pages. But there was one page, and I took pictures of the pages on my phone so I'd have them readily available. There's one phrase, the first sentence in my next book coming out, Overcoming the Shadows, Overcoming the Darkness, goes something like, could it be, it's a question in the first line of my book, could it be that the thing that caused you the most pain in your life be the key to what you're to do for the rest of your life and to impact people? And you have a line that I pulled out and I took a picture of, and it goes like this, and I want you to, maybe this will get you going. I got a feeling it will get you going. pain channeled in a positive direction is the greatest thing that can happen to you. When I read that, I underlined it, circled it, and highlighted it. Tell me what that means to you. Pain channeled in a positive direction is the greatest thing that can happen to you.
Yeah, well, that cannot think of a better thing to start. And I am fired up just hearing those words. I shared a little about my background, my childhood, and, you know, of course, while I was going through that pain, some of that trauma in my childhood, you know, I wanted to get rid of it for sure when it was happening. It was devastating at times. I dealt with some really intense issues growing up, and like many people do. But, you know, at 50 years old, you know, people ask me sometimes I'm speaking, hey, if you could get rid of it, would you get rid of it? I tell them at 50 years old, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't have the insights I have. I wouldn't be able to look at people with the love I'm able to look at them with, to have connection with human beings that I'm able to have, do a life's work devoted to serving other people, had I not gone through that pain. And it's interesting, as a father, I have two boys, and I'm a helicopter parent. I try to protect them from a lot of stuff, kind of overcompensating for my own childhood. But I know, just as I watch these kids grow, it's when they have opposition, and they use that opposition as a stepping stone. They use that opposition to learn kindness. When they mess up, to be able to forgive themselves, so they learn more compassion to forgive other people. Those type of things, it all comes out of that pain.
Wow. That is so good. Joe and Darty, you feel free to just jump in. Anything on your mind on this?
Well, I think along those lines, Christian, when we were talking the other day, one of the things that I loved that you said is that it's your journey. Nobody's really ever arrived, but that we're all on this journey And our resilience is tested over and over and over again. And I loved that you said that, because I think that for a lot of people, when they hear that word resilience, they almost feel guilt or less than if they're feeling at a low spot. And that's not it at all. It's just this journey. And as time goes on, you learn how to put the people around you that help you bounce back a little more. And I just loved when you said that the other day, that that it's a journey.
Mm-hmm. Resilience takes place in the movement, the doing. It's an action thing. You know, you don't ever master resilience. It takes place in pushing through, Darty. I appreciate you pointing that out. It's interesting, Darty. A question I get a lot of times when I'm traveling is, you know, people say, "Hey, you're the author of the book, The Resilience Breakthrough." They'll say, "What's the most important thing that a person needs to be resilient?" And my answer usually shocks them, because I say, you know, the number one thing you have to have resilience is you have to have suffering. You know, if resilience is the ability to bounce back from, you have to have something to bounce back from. And so until the suffering shows up, no resilience has ever showed up without suffering. And I know that's a hard thing to digest. And, of course, like I was saying a few minutes ago, while I'm going through the suffering, again, I would do anything to get rid of it. It's one of the most painful things in the world. But coming back on the back end of it, it's just one of the things that I think it develops maturity, it develops compassion, it develops understanding. But again, that's all rooted in that suffering. The minute that suffering kicks in, we know emotions are going to kick in. Those two things, usually when we have suffering, we have negative emotions. And it's interesting, I spent 8 years in college studying something called positive psychology, which I love. I think positive psychology is a big part of it. But as I started studying the human condition, what enabled people who had tremendous suffering to bounce back, I started noticing that they had the ability to channel positive and negative emotions, particularly negative emotions. You know, one way I teach that to youth and families that I'm working with is, you know, I use a visual metaphor of a battery, a car battery. And I'll say, you can't just charge a battery with a positive connection, and you can't charge a battery with just a negative connection. We know a battery charges because of the positive and the negative. And when I started studying, you know, families and children who had high trauma, who had gone through, you know, they were tremendously wounded, they had gone through tremendous pain, I noticed that they had the ability to create a productive outcome with their negative emotions, but they never mentioned that one time to me in college. And I started thinking to myself, what if we showed children by third grade, the minute they feel sad, angry, nervous, scared, anxiety, depression, that one, it's a human condition, is everybody experiences those emotions. It's as normal as drinking a cup of water, a glass of water, or breathing in oxygen. It's to feel sad, hurt, or angry is just the human condition. We live in a world that wants to act like, or we demonize people that have negative emotions, but it's a normal thing. And you have a huge resilience advantage if you know how to make decisions that don't hurt yourself or others with those negative emotions, and that you can create a productive outcome, whether the emotions are positive or negative. You actually have twice the energy or twice the fuel to bounce back from something if you can tap into both positive and negative emotions. If you have to wait for positive emotions to show up before you can make good decisions, put one foot in front of another, you're actually at a resilient disadvantage. You have twice the fuel to bounce back if you can tap into both positive and negative emotions. I hope that makes sense.
The movie this makes me think of, have you seen the Disney movie Inside Out?
Yes, perfect example, perfect example.
Yes, yes. See, I'm the one that can break it down. For those of us that don't have the counseling degree, that movie broke it down for me.
Battery didn't make sense, just watch that movie, everybody.
I know, but I love that reality, though, because like you said, as parents, some of us that have experienced really rough stuff early on, we tend to want to helicopter our parents to make everything easy, but then we realize that we're doing them a disservice because they're not learning that regulation. They're not learning how, and so I love that you say that.
Yeah, I was speaking by university the other day, and some professors pulled me aside in humanities department. They said, "Christian, what you're talking about with that battery there, you know, channeling negative emotions," they said, "that's actually what makes us human. The fact that we do feel sad, we do feel scared during something like COVID-19, you should feel afraid right now. We should feel uncertain. That's okay. That's just being human. That is normal, is breathing."
Well, I was just going to tell you that recently we were at a summit and some people came out of Joe's session and they came straight over to my table, and the one woman was actually angry and she said, "Nobody told me I was going to cry today and he made me cry and I don't cry." And I looked at her, she's a teacher, and I said, "I'm glad you did." Well, that made her even more mad, and she said, Why would you say that?" And I said, "Because when we're working with children, we have to be feeling it, because we can know it in our brain, but if we're not feeling it in our heart, kids will discern that in a heartbeat. And then we've broken down the connection. We've broken down the ability to connect. And so I think that we've all gotten into this feel-good thing with society that we want to make everything neat and tidy, but that's not real life.
Yep.
And so I think that when you open the door and when Joe opens the door to people saying it's okay to have that empathetic response, it's okay to feel what another person is feeling, it's okay to feel my own feelings,
that's empowerment. Darty touched on empathy, and that was leads me into my question. How much, you know, being human, we can become more empathetic or empathic to one another, especially with what we're all going through now, how much empathy we all have for one another now, especially in today's world. How do you respond to that, Christian?
Yeah, I mean, I think empathy is so, so important. I think, you know, one of the things that causes us to want to put one foot in front of another is the empathy we have for each other. The one of the first places we have found that resilience comes from internally is something called relational resilience. And that's where you go through the motions, you put one foot in front of another because someone else needs you and you need them. And when we feel empathy from another person, we're more motivated to bounce back. And when we give empathy to someone else, that can be healing for us. So empathy and resilience go hand in hand, especially from a relationship standpoint. You know, we're social creatures. When, you know, one of the reasons I've been able, you know, to connect with you, Joe, is one of the things I struggle with is anxiety. And Joe was one of the first professionals I opened up to, if not the, I think one of the top two professionals I ever shared. You know, I'm on medication for anxiety. I've dealt with anxiety my whole life. My mom has some genetics there. My mom couldn't leave the house at times because of her anxiety. And the older I get, I'm getting some of the similar anxiety my mom gets. But I'll never forget the first time I talked to Joe about my anxiety. He just looked at me, you know, smiled at me, put his arm around me, and goes, "I get it, Christian. I get it." He understood as a speaker what that was like for me. But what I'm saying is that I'm more motivated to push through in life when I feel sad, when I feel like giving up, when I know, one, I've been hurt. Human beings have a huge desire to feel heard from one another, and then to have that empathy. And so what are your feelings on that, Joe? Do you remember that conversation we had, Joe, on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we definitely had an empathic connection on that one. And, you know, being a speaker and the pressures of what we do and our, you know, I shared my story in my session, which I won't go into that because that was in my last session. So, yeah, so I really appreciate you talking about empathy because I think it's so important.
Yeah, yeah, and that relational resilience is, see, I wanted to know, where does resilience come from within? I had read hundreds of books on resilience that told me the attributes of resilience, you know, hard work, determination, perseverance. But I wanted to know, okay, you know, I spent 20 years teaching kids skills of resilience, but where does it come from within? Could, you know, imagine a world where we had a prescription for resilience. And so that kind of became my life's work. a bunch of educators challenged me to kind of figure out where does resiliency come from within. And again, the first place we saw that it came from was that relational resiliency, where you put one foot in front of another because another person needs you, and they need to, and you need them. That interdependence, not dependence, but interdependence. For example, you know, and this has actually come to light right now. You know, I've been speaking for 20 years. I don't know how that's going to shake out over the next 6 months or so, however long this takes. And so if I never got invited to speak again, I always would share with audiences that, you know, I'd go work in four different, you know, fast food restaurants, whatever I had to do to support my children. And right now, I don't even know if I could even do that. So, you know, that anxiety is there. But because of my love for my children, you know, for Mama Jackson believing in me, my wife Wendy believing in me, when, you know, she married me. You know, I told her, you know, when I was 28 years old, I had never made over $6 an hour. I said, Wendy, you got to marry someone who's a lot more functional than me. I actually broke up with her. She came to me a couple days later. She's like, you know what, Christian, I know you're learning disabled. I know you're dumb, lazy, rebellious. She gave me all my labels. And then she proposed to me and said, you know, if you marry me, you never have to worry about employment again. I'll support you. I'll take care of you for the rest of your life. I thought to myself, I may be learning disabled, but this homeboy ain't stupid. That's the woman for me. So I married Wendy because I really did love her, not because I never had to work another day in my life. But what I'm saying is, you know, right now, I'll be really frank with this audience. You know, I have an education consulting company. We're pretty much out of business right now. I mean, we can't do anything really to make money. So, like, my worst fear is literally come to life right now. But I'm not going on shutdown. I probably worked harder in the last 3 weeks than I have at any other time in my life, because I can't work. I'm just like, all right, I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to just be a fighter. And, you know, that's what one thing Mama Jackson taught me from the time I was a kid. You know, that relational resilience is so, so powerful. You know, a great example of relational resilience is you'll see soldiers coming home from war. They've maybe lost, you know, a hand, an arm, or, you know, they have some major medical issue. And a lot of times they'll say they want to go back to the battle, back to the war, and it's not usually because of political reasons. It's that camaraderie, it's the love for their fellow soldiers, is why they're willing to get back into the fight. And we realize now that's something called relational resilience. You don't have to be born with relational resilience. We can literally teach that internal resilience that comes from within. The second place that resilience comes from internally is something called street resilience. And I think, you know, Dr. Williams, your life, me and Joe were talking about this earlier, is a powerful, powerful example of street resilience. And that's where you take the pain, you know, being hurt or disrespected or social inequality, and what you learn, and also what you've learned from past mistakes, and you use it as fuel to propel you forward. And it could be any type of disrespect. You know, I had a professor who came to me in college. And he figured out I was in college with a sixth grade math level, seventh grade reading and writing level at the time. I didn't even know how to tell time on a hand clock, because to me, a quarter to five equals 25 minutes to five. They're telling me, but to me, you know, a quarter equals, they're telling me, I can't even say it right, a quarter is 15 minutes, they're telling me, but to me, a quarter equals 25. See, my learning disabilities in math are so bad. But, you know, I'm struggling with even telling time on a hand clock. And this professor says, look, Christian, how did you make it this far in college? And he says, look, if you can get a college degree, my degree is worth less. I literally walked off that college campus sobbing. I just found out this past year that professor will be teaching out of, you know, two college textbooks. We're in the introduction to school social work textbook, something called RTI, PBIS. But anyways, but this professor has to lecture on my theories now. Now, that might sound like I'm being arrogant or cocky, and my argument is, no, I'm being street resilient. You told me I'm not even good enough to be on this college campus. Now I'm good enough to be on it. I'm going to use that as a fuel source, dude. And so we find that people, we started looking at kids who had high trauma but were thriving, almost all of these children would talk about being disrespected and using that disrespect as a reason to put one foot in front of another, to not give up. And so, you know, I studied your life a little bit, Dr. Williams. Just see a powerful example where you took that hurt, that pain, you put it into your education, you proved a lot of people wrong. And I know that was a painful thing while you were going through that, but I just think your life is a great example of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's so true, and you hit the nail on the head. I just would not I wanted to be the best I could be at whatever it is, no matter what it was, whether it was working at a fast food place or umpiring at baseball games during the summer, whatever it was, I was trying to be the best that could possibly be just to show people that. And they didn't know I was going through it, but I sure knew I was going through it. And well, I was overcoming it myself internally. Yeah.
No, it's powerful, powerful work. And the next part of street resilience is you direct your hurt and anger towards a cause rather than the individual, you know, and what you've done to break the silence, what Joe's done with Hope for the Wounded. Those are both where you put your energy into a cause. You know, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers would be an example of that. You know, we have pain, we have suffering, and then we put that pain into a cause that helps humanity thrive. You know, what Nelson Mandela did in the prison camp, you know, with that disrespect, what Rosa Parks did sitting on the back of the bus, what Cesar Chavez did in bringing together all the migrant farm workers, unionizing them. You know, everybody knows the story of Michael Jordan getting cut from the JV basketball team. Those are just examples of street resilience. They were told you can't do this, and then they use that as a reason to become greater. They use the inequality, the disrespect, as a reason to prove people wrong. And we started looking at kids with high trauma who were bouncing back. We started noticing they would all tap into relational resilience. They would tap into street resilience, and then something called resource and rock bottom.
Yeah, Christian, I want to stop you there. We'll take a break, but we got the first two in, relational and street resilience, and we're going to catch the other two on the other side of this break. So let's take a break, get this in here real quick, and we'll be right back with Christian Moore and Joe and Darty and this awesome interview. So don't leave us. Hang right there for the last segment of Breaking the Silence. We'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
What? I have thoroughly enjoyed our guest this evening as we start off this Warriors of Hope and the first week of this series is just an absolute wonderful, wonderful interview and information that Christian you're giving and Joe and Darty and just fantastic. I do want to let you know that you want to put on your calendar Sunday night, May 10th. We're going to have all of the guests, Christian Moore and Lieutenant Consuelo and Roy and Judge Teske and George Miller and Joe and Darty. All of us are going to be on a two-hour live TV broadcast. It's going to be all the way around the world, and that'll be Sunday night at this time, 8 o'clock Central Time, all the way to 10 o'clock. We're going 2 hours right here on BBS Radio TV, and it'll all be right here in 2 hours of us just talking back and forth. And Christian, I can tell that I haven't even got through the tip of the iceberg of the questions I want to get from you, but you're throwing out so much information. Anybody that wants to hear the rebroadcast of this, just get on my page at BBS Radio under Breaking the Silence, and around Tuesday it'll be posted there in the archives, because you'll want to listen to this show over and over to catch all the information, Christian, that you're giving out tonight. Before you go into the three and four other two ways, Christian, do you think the education system could be better equipped to teach or prepare our children at a young age on how to handle adversity in their lives?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. We don't get a lot of pushback from teachers, people who work directly with kids about mm-hmm. the importance of resilience and social emotional education. They know it's needed. A lot of the time, the biggest challenge that we hear from them is funding for social and emotional education and prioritizing. You know, we live in a world that is much more focused on success and academics than the human condition and what role resilience can play. It's interesting, you know, over the lifespan, 80% of your success in life comes from your ability to understand your own emotions and behaviors and the emotion and behaviors of others. They term that as emotional intelligence. That's EQ. We have our IQ, which is our intellectual quotient. EQ is our emotional quotient. And again, the vast majority of your success throughout life comes from emotional intelligence because you never stop using it. You use it all the time. And it impacts yes. you in every relationship you have and every aspect of your life. And so many public schools across this country, it's not that they don't want to spend time on it. They need it to be prioritized. And you know, an academic takes up a lot of that. And I believe it needs to be a balance between the academics and social and emotional education. But I think as many kids right now are out of school and they're dealing with many challenges in their life, I think coming out of this COVID-19, I think we're going to put more emphasis on resilience and social and emotional education for these kids.
Yeah, and you know, I really believe, and talking to all three of you and all the guests that we had on the other day in our little conference call, that, yeah, I realized during this shutdown right now, everybody's kind of just sitting at home and not doing their work with conferences and speaking. But I really believe on the other side of this, everybody's going to be more busy than they ever been in their life. And I think you're all going to come back even stronger, and it's going to be bigger and better because there's going to be so many people saying, hey, we need more help. Because this affected all of us. How do we handle this emotional trauma? Help us. And you guys, your phones are going to be ringing off the hook. I believe all of you are. Your calendar is going to be double booked in the coming months. I really believe that. Okay, Christian, go ahead and jump into 3 and 4 because I think we have about 10 minutes left to make sure we at least get to those four different areas yep. that resilience comes from.
All right, the third place resilience comes from within is something called resource resilience. When we started looking at people who were bouncing back, we noticed they don't usually do it in isolation. They have some type of support. You know, I had Mama Jackson in my life, my incredible wife, Wendy, people like Joe showing up. So we define it in the book as you increase your resilience by tapping into the resources available to you. Those would be things like your talents, your communication skills, relationships, of course, physical assets, personality traits, work ethic. None of us can thrive on an island. We need help from others. You know, this coronavirus is going to be dealt with by a large amount of resource resilience. We're about to see one of the biggest unleashings of resources and resource resilience this country has ever seen. You know, we tell people they got to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but they have to have the laces. They have to have something to pull themselves up with. One of my favorite examples of resource resilience and I've had the opportunity to be at a couple conferences with him. His name is Kyle Maynard. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was born with no arms, no legs, just literally these little stubs. And he wrestled in high school and in college. Mm. He owns a gym right now in Atlanta. But he recently put rubber balls literally on the ends of these stubs, and he crawled to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. So all any of us can do is maximize where we are. You know, you can only be resilient within the context of how much money you do or not have in the bank, who your boss is, who you're married to. You can only be resilient where you're standing. And by the way, if you're overwhelmed in life or you're dealing with any type of situation where you can't bounce back from it, as an LCSW, I do want to point out, I mean, I can talk about resilience all day long, but it's important to be able to go get professional help, meet with a clinical therapist, a mental health professional, because again, resilience takes place where we're standing, and it takes place in the effort effect. It's not a destination. Helen Keller is a powerful example of resource resilience. You know, I've been watching these teachers on the news that are like you know, they're raising money and they're feeding kids. I know in New York they have like 90 centers that are open where teachers, educators are feeding children, providing mental health support, community support, especially these first responders. So while their parents are working in the front lines in the hospital, there's these safe places for them to go. And teachers and educators are stepping up in all kinds of ways to reach these students. And that's where that resource resilience comes in. I look at your story and Joe's story, where you guys and my own story, we all three would not be where we are if we did not have tremendous resources that we were able to access. And I think one of the things coming out of COVID 19 is you're going to see a lot of those resources hopefully can start going to people who have not had those resources for so long. And that's going to be interesting to see how this world changes economically to help more people. That's going to be a fascinating process.
Wow.
And then the last one here is rock bottom resilience. And that's when you're at your lowest point. You dig down deep and you believe in your ability to change your circumstances and combat hopelessness and fight on. And there's kind of a question you have to ask yourself. And in Y-Tri, in our resilience work, we call this flipping the switch. And to flip the switch when you're rock bottom, you have to say to yourself, how can I use this challenge as a reason to not give up? That's kind of the gateway to resilience. Until you ask yourself that question, how can this pain, how can this suffering be converted into my best friend? That's kind of the gateway, the entry to resilience. And we encourage people when they're in that rock bottom moment to just kind of take that next step and ask themselves that question. It's kind of like a marathon runner has to just run to the next block, to the next block, to the next block. And, you know, people often ask me, well, where does the motivation come from when you're rock bottom to not give up, to push through? And I always point out to them that it takes place in the minute you put that energy in or you put that action in. The motivation comes after the action. A lot of people think, well, I'm just going to wait till I feel motivated to put one step in front of another. If you wait for the motivation to show up, it's likely not going to show up. But if you start with the action, you just start with movement. You know, and when I've been depressed, to just get out and go for a walk or to just get out of bed, something as simple as taking a shower. We just have to start the action, and then the motivation kicks in. And I know I talked to Joe about that before. I know that's something that Joe has felt in his own life, and I'm sure, Darty, you've experienced that as well.
Yes, definitely. Sometimes you got to fake it till you make it. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
You say, I can, you know, I'm going to keep going through the right motions until they become an emotion that I feel, that I am invested in. And I did run one marathon, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because you get to the end, and it becomes, you start envisioning, we have a son from Ethiopia, and I started saying, I'm running as beautifully as my son right now. Because I don't know if you've ever seen an Ethiopian runner, but they're beautiful. And so you envision it.
Wow.
You envision it.
Go ahead. I'm just concurring with what Christian says. Some days you just got to get up. Sometimes I get up and I think, you know, well, I have to get on this trip and, you know, this 5-day trip and head to New Mexico. And then I got to go to Texas. Then I got to go, you know, and Darty's helping me make all the connections. I don't feel like getting up and doing it. I don't feel that way, but getting up, getting moving, getting to the airport, and all of a sudden you're flying high and things are going well.
That motivation
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
both of you, well, all three of you, what I see in you is that once you do start taking those action steps, you remember your purpose. And
absolutely.
Then you start, you know, and so that motivates me, because I get excited when I see you all stepping into your purpose, and that's exciting.
That's when the adrenaline starts flowing, and the juices and the creativity, everything just starts pouring out of me anyway, is when, you know, that pressure's on, and I just love that. I tell you what, Christian, I know we're out of time, but I tell you, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to get in contact with Christian Moore, and how would they do that?
Yeah, it's very easy. My website is whytry.org. That's just W-H-Y-T-R-Y.org. you know, we help kids answer that question, why try? If they try in life, they'll have more opportunity, freedom, self-respect. It's kind of why we're called Why Try, is to help answer that question. But yeah, whytry.org. And then on whytry.org, you can just email me there. I think we have info at whytry. You'll see there where you can contact me there at whytry.org. Okay. And on whytry.org, we have a new podcast called the Resilience Breakthrough Podcast. You can see right there. We just put our third episode on there. And so please check out the podcast there. And then on our website, I'm very excited about this. We've had over 6,000 families now start using this. But on our website, you can access for free our parenting guide that focuses on bringing resilience to the whole family. It's full of, you know, has activities, insights to help the family connect during this time. I'm sure there's some tension in a few homes, but it helps them connect and increase resilience. And again, this is free right now. And so during this COVID-19, we're giving it away for free. It took us 4 years to build that. So, and then again, also on our website, you can access the book, The Resilience Breakthrough. And please check out our website. We got a lot of resources there for everybody. And again, my heart's with everybody going through this tremendous trauma right now. We all are dealing with trauma, and I believe resilience is a social justice issue. I think the fact that we know where resilience comes from, and some people don't get access to it, that's not okay. We got to make sure everybody in this country gets access to that internal resilience. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on this show and look forward to connecting with all three of you more in the future. You guys are all my heroes.
Well, fantastic, Christian. I tell you, whytry.org, and I got a feeling your network may just get explode tonight with people that's going to be tapping in there and downloading stuff and reaching out to you and all of that. Joe and Darty, I'm really getting close to time, so I want to give you each 30 seconds to give your final thoughts, and then I'll close it out. But Joe or Darty, jump in and give us your 30 seconds worth on Christian.
Here's my 30 seconds on Christian. Now you know
there you
why
go.
Christian started the series on Warriors of Hope. You all heard it tonight. He's a true warrior of hope. And I also send out all my thoughts to everybody dealing with this pandemic across the world.
Fantastic. Thank you, Joe. Darty?
And, you know, I found this today of all days, and I thought it was perfect, and I knew it was going to come in handy. It is a beautiful quote by a gentleman named Chuck DeGroat, and it says, "Hope rejects shallow optimism. Hope refuses cynical pessimism. Hope laments. Hope tells the truth. Hope names reality. Hope sees through the wilderness and never, ever goes around the wilderness. Be a people of hope." And that's what I want. You know, Christian has been a great start to this. He's in the trenches going through the wilderness with people. I appreciate him. I appreciate all the people that are coming up. And we're in it. We're ready to go through the wilderness with everybody.
Fantastic. Thank you, Darty and Joe. And I'll tell you what, Christian, it's been an honor to have you as our guest this evening to kick off our Warriors of Hope series. Next week, Lieutenant Colonel Consuelo Kickbush is going to be here, and you will not want to miss that. From the bottom of my heart, Christian, I just say thank you. Keep being the champion that you are. And I got a feeling you give awesome hugs, and I can't wait to get a hug from you someday soon when we're on the same stage or just get to meet each other face-to-face. Thank you for being with us tonight, Christian.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that as well. Thank you.
Okay, and Joe and Darty, we'll see you next week, and then for the next 4 or 5 weeks. And then don't forget, March 10th, Christian will be back with all of the guests in the next few weeks right here on Breaking the Silence. But you will not want to miss next week with Joe and Darty as our co-host, Lieutenant Colonel, retired from the U.S. Army, Consuelo Kickbush, will be right here. No matter what you're going through, no matter what you're enduring right now, no matter what's happened to you in the past, I want to let you know, and we all want to let you know, there's always, always hope. God bless you. Have an awesome evening. Join us right here next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.